Beijing. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington, and this is Crossroads Asia. Tonight on our program, an Australian satellite spots possible debris from the missing Malaysia Airlines plane. Taiwan Parliament occupiers seek transparency in the trade deal with China. And we mark International Happiness Day. It's all ahead on VOA's Crossroads Asia. Australian authorities say satellite imagery has located unidentified debris some 2,500 kilometers southwest of Perth in the Indian Ocean that could be from missing Malaysia Airlines flight MH370. Australia is sending search planes and ships to the region to try to confirm the finding. Ron Corbin reports from Bangkok.
The apparent breakthrough in the 12-day search for the Malaysia Airlines flight MH370 came Thursday when satellite imagery spotted objects floating in the southern Indian Ocean that could possibly be debris from the ill-fated aircraft. Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott told the Australian Parliament new and credible information had come to light in the search for the Malaysian Boeing 777 that disappeared on March 9, bound for Beijing with 239 passengers and crew.
The Australian Maritime Safety Authority has received information based on satellite imagery of objects possibly related to the search. Following specialist analysis of this satellite imagery, two possible objects related to the search have been identified.
Mr. Abbott told Parliament a Royal Australian Air Force Orion aircraft had been diverted in an attempt to locate other objects. In a news conference a short while later, John Young, the General Manager of Australia's Maritime Authority, said the larger of the objects is roughly 24 metres wide.
The objects are relatively indistinct on the imagery. I don't profess to be an expert in assessing the imagery, but those who are expert indicate they are credible sightings. The indication to me is of objects that are a reasonable size and probably awash with water bobbing up and down out of the surface.
He says the satellite imagery is not clear enough to determine if there are markings or features that would confirm if they are from the missing passenger jet. The objects were spotted in a part of the ocean that authorities estimate is several thousand metres deep. Authorities are scrambling for search aircraft from Australia, New Zealand and the United States that have maritime radar appropriate for locating the objects spotted by the satellites. Although the weather in the area is moderate, officials say visibility is not ideal, which could hamper search efforts. Authorities are also sending a C-130 Hercules plane that will drop data marker buoys to track water currents and trace where the debris could be moving. Young was cautious not to raise expectations until the findings can be confirmed.
We have been in this business of doing search and rescue and using satellite images before, and they do not always turn out to be related to the search, even if they look good. So we will hold our views on that until they're sighted close up.
Authorities were non-committal about when that confirmation could come, but said the first of the four search planes are already on the scene and others are expected to arrive in the coming hours. More than 25 countries have been involved in the search for the missing aircraft. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
This is Crossroads Asia on the Voice of America. Coming up, difficult days for the news media in Hong Kong and Vietnam. Protesters are occupying Taiwan's parliament for a second full day to block passage of a deal that would liberalize the island's service trade with China. But the aggressive protest is less about the widely supported trade pact than anger over a perceived lack of transparency. Ralph Jennings reports for VOA News from Taipei.
The several hundred students who broke into Taiwan's parliament on Tuesday night and remain inside Thursday are demanding a harder look at a pact to liberalize the service trade between their island and economic giant China. The deal that would open 144 service categories to the other side's investors enjoys broad support, but the protesters want a detailed examination before it clears Parliament. Protester Iris Zhang of Taipei, part of the group that broke into Parliament on Tuesday, says Taiwanese people need more information.
The government can't just approve without the people saying yes or letting us know what exactly the law or the content is about. This is kind of like cheating on the citizens.
Negotiators from Taiwan and longtime political rival China approved the services trade deal in June. Taiwanese companies covered by the pact can take a controlling stake in joint ventures and expand banking, healthcare, and tourism businesses in China. The agreement would help Taiwan's larger companies, but may hurt smaller ones as competitors from China open shop. Island officials believe the pact ultimately will modernize the service sector and create jobs. Parliament has handled the deal slowly despite pressure from leaders on both sides as the two main political parties fight over how to vote on it. President Ma Ying-jeou's Nationalist Party, which has a legislative majority, wants a quick package vote this month or next. The opposition Democratic Progressive Party advocates a more time-consuming item-by-item review that could strike clauses that might hurt local industry. Raymond Wu, managing director of eTelligence, a political risk consultancy in Taipei, says the dispute boils down to protecting local business.
Whether the people of Taiwan are willing and ready to open up the market and become more integrated regionally, this is the fundamental issue at stake.
The opposition is generally cautious toward China. Beijing has considered self-ruled Taiwan part of its territory since the Chinese Civil War of the 1940s and demands eventual reunification. Protesters gathered on Tuesday night because they say the nationalists went back on their word after agreeing to an item-by-item review. After a break-in that night, about 400 people occupied the legislative podium with plans to stay for a hearing Friday unless police forced them out. Ralph Jennings, VOA News, Taipei.
The United States has expressed its concern over recent attacks involving members of the media in Hong Kong. Some are viewing the violence as an assault on a free press in the Chinese-controlled Special Administrative Region. U.S. State Department spokeswoman Jen Psaki Wednesday said Washington is troubled by a series of incidents over the past year she says seem to target Hong Kong media figures.
Hong Kong's well-established tradition of respect for the rule of law and internationally recognized fundamental freedoms, including freedom of the press, remain crucial to Hong Kong's long-standing success and reputation as a leading center of global commerce. We expect Hong Kong's law enforcement authorities will fully and transparently investigate these incidents.
State Department spokeswoman Jen Psaki. On Wednesday, two executives of Hong Kong Morning News Media Group, which is planning to launch an independent Chinese language daily this year, were attacked by four masked men armed with metal bars. The Foreign Correspondents Club condemned the assault, which followed a brutal attack that critically wounded former Mingpao Daily News chief editor Kevin Lau February 28th. He remains hospitalized. That attack prompted thousands to march in support of press freedom earlier this month. The attacks have followed a series of editorial and media ownership changes that have prompted alarm among rights groups, Hong Kong lawmakers, and analysts. Hong Kong police Wednesday announced two men have been charged in the Kevin Lau case. But Bob Dietst, Asia Program Coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists, speaking with VOA's Victor Beattie, questioned the way the police have been handling the investigation.
We're also concerned in the Kevin Lau case, the way the police were so quick to dismiss the motive behind the attack on Kevin as it not related to his journalism, when they said, well, we don't know why this attack occurred. We do place a great deal of trust in the Hong Kong police. I think they're a professional police corps. But we are kind of worried about this pressure coming down on Hong Kong media. The other aspect is that, frankly, Hong Kong media is under more than physical attack, although those threats are looming. The whole institution of the media in Hong Kong seems to be under attack from an economic base and from a political base, increasing pressure from Beijing on owners who are being co-opted and drawn into the mainland government. We really, really worry about the future of Hong Kong media. It's long been independent, and now that seems to be under threat.
So you take this to mean this direct pressure is coming right from Beijing?
I'm not going to say that these attacks on journalists come from Beijing, and I'm not going to ascribe a motive to them. But in general, Hong Kong media is under pressure from the mainland government to increasingly toe the Communist Party line. I mean, that's just a given, and that's understood. There are still many independent voices in Hong Kong, but that space for independence is shrinking, and it's shrinking rapidly.
Bob Dietz of the Committee to Protect Journalists. Hong Kong lawmaker and former journalist Claudia Mo tells Victor Beatty her concern is that Beijing wants to gain control of the territory's press and thus control its ideology.
We're not linking directly all those attacks, the recent spate of attacks these days to the mainland authorities, but a suspicion, some logical assumptions are always there. And we need to stay very alert on this press freedom front. We're terrified of self-censorship because with self-censorship, it's very difficult to prove. I mean, who's going to acknowledge that, oh, yes, I've censored myself, right? No newsrooms would ever admit to that, except we do have public opinion in Hong Kong, and at the Legislative Council, we raise as much noise as possible to make people aware, because those self-censored newsrooms can always hide behind this what they call editorial independence. I was a journalist for some 30 years. I knew what editorial independence is about, and they would say, don't come near us. Press freedom is sacred, and so on and so forth. So we have to do it the other way around. We must make as much noise as possible to make Hong Kong people realize what sort of ideological society we're living in.
Claudia, are you hopeful that you can maintain press freedom in Hong Kong?
I'm basically pessimistic. Why? Because when it comes to self-censorship, you do it mainly for two reasons. The first one is political, second one's commercial. With the political pressure going about in Hong Kong, they could do it indirectly, politically pressurizing the proprietors, the management of newsrooms, right? And you can never find out unless people start talking. And with commercial pressure, it's always advertising revenue. In Hong Kong, more and more businesses, originally from mainland China, it's all mainland China based. So the red capital, the red money, and if the Bank of China refuses to run advertisements in your paper or in your on your commercial radio, you would suffer quite a lot. So with that, those two factors considered, I'm not too optimistic, except we still have to fight on, of course.
Hong Kong lawmaker and former journalist Claudia Mo. Another place where journalists are facing difficulties is Vietnam. This week, a popular Vietnamese blogger was sentenced to 15 months in jail for posting material critical of that country's Communist Party leaders. Following a brief trial in Hanoi, Pham Vet Dao was found guilty of abusing democratic freedoms to infringe on the state's interests. The judge said Dao's posts have defamed party and state leaders, causing anxiety among the public and reducing people's trust in the leadership. The 61-year-old apologized for mistakenly blogging some incorrect information, but he denied that his actions harm society in any way. Vietnam recently has become more aggressive at cracking down on dissent, convicting several high-profile bloggers on anti-state charges. 2 weeks ago, former state-run newspaper reporter Tuong Duy Nhat was sentenced to 2 years in prison. His blog often criticized Vietnam's leadership and raised concerns about Chinese territorial claims in the South China Sea. The International Federation for Human Rights says at least 212 Vietnamese dissidents are imprisoned and many more are under house arrest. Vietnam says there are no political prisoners or prisoners of conscience in the country, only those who violate the law. Pham Duong Trang is a Vietnamese journalist. I asked her to describe the human rights situation in her country.
Well, actually, you know, human rights violations is not something strange in Vietnam. Admittedly, Vietnam, after the communists took over power, after the Vietnamese Communist Party took over the country in 1975, the countries must have been familiar with human rights violations, serious and widespread human rights violations. Anyway, in the previous decades, because of the lack of internet and the lack of transparent and, well, open environment online, yes, in the absence of internet and so on, human rights violations still existed, but they went unknown. Anyway, with the emerging of internet and especially social media networks since around 2006, human rights violations in Vietnam have become more known. I mean, there are more people in Vietnam and in the world also knowing about human rights violations in Vietnam. And social media networks is more and more popular in Vietnam, especially Facebook. I think Facebook plays a very important role in, you know, providing information and ensuring more transparent and open space forum, online forum, I mean, online space for people to share opinions, to voice their opinions and to share their views, their thinking, their thoughts, their ideas about some government policies.
If you believe laws like Article 258 threaten your freedom of speech, why do you continue to express your opinions under threat of arrest?
Well, let me speak briefly. As I told you, many human rights are now widespreadly violated in Vietnam, especially, I think, freedom of association and freedom of expression. As a journalist, or a state-owned journalist to be exact, I find it, you know, increasingly hard to work independently without state control. And also, as a journalist, I know that the 258 article is a very restrictive provision, and it is abused by the police control state to imprison bloggers, especially journalists. I mean, we journalists seem to be the main target of this article. So as a journalist, I think, and also another reason is the three successive arrests of bloggers and journalists just within just less than 1 month in 2013, the police arrested two journalists and bloggers, two famous journalist bloggers in Vietnam. From May 26th to June 13th of year, they put two famous bloggers and journalists in prison. And just 3 days later, they put another blogger in prison. So you see, there was an escalation in arresting journalists and bloggers, especially journalists.
I also wanted to ask, what gives you hope that the Vietnamese government might be made to embrace fundamental change? Do you have that hope?
Yes, we do have the hope. Firstly, because we think democracy or democratization is an unavoidable or inevitable process. As a country, the nation in the world is on the trend, in the trend of becoming a democracy. It's just a matter of time. Anyway, you know also, I mean, democracy can be an unavoidable, inevitable process, but freedom is not like that, but it's another matter.
Vietnamese journalist Pham Dong Thuong. This is Crossroads Asia on the Voice of America. In the Kingdom of Bhutan, the measure of the quality of life is expressed as the GNH, the Gross National Happiness. In 2012, the tiny Himalayan nation persuaded the UN General Assembly to establish the International Day of Happiness, and today, March 20th, is that day. It's a formal opportunity to consider what makes us happy. As we hear from Faith Lapidus in this report by Faiza Al-Masri, the emotion is so important to our well-being that America's founding fathers considered the pursuit of it a God-given right.
What is happiness? We know it when we feel it, but there's no simple way to define it, says Joseph Panetta, spokesman for Live Happy magazine. However, he adds, there are certain components to happiness.
Those things include positive relationships, a positive outlook. They include engagement, being engaged in your community and the things that go on around you. And meaning. Meaning is probably one of the most important things. When someone feels that what they're doing has a real meaning behind it that is greater than themselves, they derive a much more positive feeling from doing it.
Being happy, he says, is essential for our health.
We know from a scientific perspective that human beings are actually hardwired to perform their best when happy. People with positive and optimistic mindsets earn higher incomes, they set and achieve more aggressive goals, they have less stress, they're more energetic, and they also recover from illness faster, and interestingly, they live longer.
Filmmaker Adam Schell agrees. He considers himself a happy person.
I've always, had a high baseline for happiness, and my default goes back to happy and content. I like to laugh a lot. And for me, that's one of my priorities in life.
Schell has traveled across America searching for genuinely happy people for his documentary, Pursuing Happiness.
What we did is we just reached out to everybody we knew along that route and said, hey, who's the happiest person you know? And we got amazing responses.
They found more than 360 happy people.
We've interviewed people in their late 90s. We actually have a woman who's 104. We've also interviewed people who are two, barely able to talk, but they have a perspective on happiness and everything in between.
Schell says those people didn't let life's challenges take away their happiness.
There's this one gentleman who actually lives in Cincinnati, Ohio. He lost both of his hands from his elbow down in an electrical accident almost 25 years ago. Then he lost his wife to cancer and had to raise his daughter on his own. And this is a guy who, it seems like, everything that could go wrong in his life was going wrong. And the entire time he was going through all of this, he maintained such high standards of, attitude and emotion. And he was always happy. He was always cracking jokes and seeing the lighter side of life.
People, he says, are not happy because they're successful. They succeed because they're happy.
Life is difficult in any way you slice it, no matter where you live, how you live, and I think it's all about attitude. It's how you look at the world, and when something bad happens, you have to go through that. Negative emotions and the fear and the loss and the pain, and none of the people that we've interviewed have denied those emotions, but it's how you turn that around. It's saying, okay, I went through that. That happened. Now I want to get back to me. Now I want to get back to the way I want to be in life.
Schell will show segments from his documentary in New York on March 20th, the International Day of Happiness, to encourage people to focus on what makes them happy. That's also the goal behind the Acts of Happiness campaign by Live Happy Magazine, says Joseph Panetta.
The Acts of Happiness campaign will actually bring walls of happiness to major metropolitan cities all across the country. And these walls of happiness are meant for people to go there and write on them their acts of happiness, what they do to share and spread happiness in the world. Happiness grows when you share it and when you spread it. If they're not in a city where there is a wall located, they can go to the website actsofhappiness.org. And there's a virtual wall there, and they can share and celebrate their acts of happiness on the virtual wall.
After all, he says, happiness is contagious. And you can celebrate it every day of the year. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Well, wishing you a very happy day. Remember to look at our website. You can get to it at voanews.com. Thanks very much for joining us on tonight's Crossroads Asia. I'm Sarah Williams. Please stay tuned for International Edition with Susan Yaki, coming up next.